I'm Heather.
And I'm Corey.
And this is Movie Shelf, where we talk about movies, movie trivia, and just about anything related to pop culture. We're glad you're here.
And I'd like to apologize to our listeners ahead of time that the allergy season is hitting me right now, so if a little gets by without being edited here and there, I do apologize ahead of time.
In today's episode, we're tackling a special listener request, and we're going to be talking about Us, meaning the movie, not just us, as in Corey and Heather. We'll also chat about The Dark Phoenix and Lion King in this Movie Shelf Bundle episode. And of course, we'll enjoy a side of bacon.
Bacon.
So, Us.
Yes.
Before we kind of really dive into some of what we liked and didn't like about the movie, let's refresh our memories and talk about what the movie is.
Go right ahead.
The movie opens and we're in the 80s. And we have a little young girl, and she's with her parents, and they're exploring the amusement park or carnival park at Santa Cruz. The little
girl seems to be such an iconic location for some movies.
Yes, we'll touch on that a little bit later. And this little girl, like little girls like to do sometimes, she wanders off.
No.
I know. My mom, she always got so annoyed when I wandered off in stores.
Oh, I wandered off in Disney World. Boy, did my parents not like that.
So this little girl wanders off and finds herself in a funhouse, Hall of Mirrors, and comes across a reflection that's not really a reflection. Fast forward now about 30 years, and it seems this young girl is now a grown woman, married with two children, and they're headed to their family's lake house for what looks like a summer trip or like a weekend getaway. Without consulting the wife, the husband made plans for a day trip out to Santa Cruz, and immediately the wife is on edge, doesn't want to go, but she compromises and gives in. So while they're at the beach, the son comes across an odd sight, which is of a man who's standing on the beach. To me, he kind of looks like he's in a scarecrow formation. He's got like a big trench coat on and arms out. And you see some blood dripping, I think, off of his hand. And this is a scene, an iconic scene that I think everyone would have seen in the previews.
Yeah, I believe so.
So that's a little odd. And later that evening, the family, they're now back at the lake house. And they are now enduring a home invasion. And they realize their antagonizers look just like them.
Yes, they do.
And so the movie then intensifies from there, trying to survive and figure out what's going on and who these people really are. So that, I think, in a nutshell, sort of, is Us.
It'd be in a nutshell.
Now, we're going to try to refrain from the actual spoilers of the film. But one thing that is definitely key to keep in mind when you watch Us is that there's the basic premise, and then there's a million ways you can perhaps interpret the movie. So I think plain and simple, the movie might be one thing.
Yeah.
But what you truly make of it...
What is it you think the director is really trying to convey here?
Yeah.
What hidden messages is he trying to, implant into our minds, seed into our minds, kind of?
Yeah. And I don't know if there's one direct message.
Yeah.
I think I came up with my own conclusion.
There are like several parallels you can obviously derive from it.
So I think it's definitely a movie it's less to talk about what it is and more to talk about what you think it is.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So first off, this is ultimately a horror film. It's in the horror genre.
I would almost call it a suspense comedy, but...
Yeah, so that's actually my first bullet point of my likes, is that I appreciated the scare mixed in with the humor. In fact, we were even watching a little clip with Jordan Peele, the director, who was talking about, it was very purposeful for him. He doesn't want to go scare, and never give you a chance to breathe.
Yeah.
He wanted to kind of scare, and then like...
A little chuckle.
Give you a little moment just to take a break from it, which I thought he did great. And I really liked, and I think I'm sure you did too, I really liked the pop culture references. So one cool thing, since we rented this movie, the opening scene is... I think it was the opening scene. You're looking at a TV, and it's showing the Hands Across America commercial promotion spiel. And then also bookending the TV are some shelves.
Well, some VCR tapes.
Yes, their movie shelf. Yes. So, of course, we had to pause it and see, okay, what's on their movie shelf? And I think you had The Goonies, you had The Man with Two Brains, this movie called Chud, which I had not heard of, and then The Right Stuff. So these are also very purposeful movies to be on the movie shelf of this particular movie.
Yes. And the things about the Hands Across America, that's also touched on throughout the movie. And I don't know why the director decided to choose this event to kind of touch on throughout the movie. But, you know, I was young and I remember when Hands Across America happened, and it was an ultimate failure. There were no hands across America, because when it was this published live on TV, they showed you the people touching the East Coast. They showed you the people touching the West Coast. They showed you nothing in between live at all. And when you look it up, there's all these massive gaps. So, you know, there was no connection from the East Coast to the West Coast.
Yeah, so, but for whatever reason, that plays a very key role in this movie. Another fun thing was the fact that they were at the Santa Cruz Beach. And we mentioned that the film starts, I think, like in 1986. And so when the mother and father and the little girl are visiting the boardwalk carnival type of thing, I think it's the mother makes a mention saying, like pointing to the carousel saying, oh, I think they're filming a movie over there. And what they would have been filming would have been Lost Boys, which of course took place at Santa Cruz.
Yes.
I think that they had the kind of closer to the opening of the movie Lost Boys, when they're driving into Santa Cruz, it like shows murder capital of the world or something like that.
But a lot of craziness.
So yeah, so there was that nod to Lost Boys there, which was great. And also, I definitely appreciate, especially as we are on the brink of Shark Week next week, the little boy, and this is actually fast forwarding into the present day, the little boy is wearing a Jaws t-shirt. So, of course, I like Jaws.
You more than like Jaws.
It is pretty much the, you know, best movie ever. And also, I thought this was interesting. The little boy, and you see him in the preview all the time. He's wearing like a Wolfman mask. And that little mask, it reminds me of when I was young, which would have been it's like in the 1986-ish time, like when I was a little girl. And those little masks with like the vinyl costumes.
Yeah.
Like, it reminded me of that kind of costume. So I just thought that was it was an interesting choice for that to happen. Or for him to be having that, because it didn't feel very modern. It felt very nostalgic. In fact, I kept on thinking, like, maybe we're stuck in the 80s. Like, I don't know. I don't know why or how, but maybe we're somehow stuck in
maybe
the
80s. Maybe they're from Portland.
Portland is where the 90s are alive.
Oh, not the 80s. Oh, I'm sorry.
We're also big Portlandia fans. All right, so the movie, as we kind of touched on this a little bit before, is just dripping with lots of symbolism, I think, in some of these references. And throughout the movie, it gives you clues to maybe what's really happening. Like even the Hands Across America, that plays some big symbolism. With these home invaders, their outfits that they wear, they look like, to me, they look like they're like big red jumpsuits. But you realize that everything they're wearing is very symbolic to their mission. And we learned a little bit more about this, I think, when we watched some of the clips about the movie. The big red jumpsuit, which is actually kind of like a nod, I think, to Jason.
I remember him wearing red. I mean, a jumpsuit, yeah, but...
Well, no, I'm not talking about the red, but the jumpsuit. And then glove, I think, was like supposed to be a nod for like Michael Jackson. And then there's the big scissors that they have, which of course is like a nod to Freddy.
Okay, yeah.
So anyway, there's, again, some of that 80s pop culture kind of nostalgia, like I said, kind of sprinkled through some of these things. So watching the film, I wasn't sure if ultimately this is a metaphor for something. We talked about this before, that there's a million ways you can interpret.
Oh, this movie is nothing but metaphors, in my opinion.
But like what the metaphor was, I don't know. I don't know if Jordan Peele is just wanting to tease all of us and, you know, just let us come up with our own interpretations, or if he truly had an idea. I don't know.
You have to watch it that way, because almost nothing... So I'm going to jump to one of my big dislikes in the movie. Almost nothing is explained.
That is true. You don't know why truly things are how they are.
Yeah, you don't know where these invaders truly originate from.
Yeah, I mean, there is an explanation, but it's like, well, wait, why? Like, why? Yeah.
Who built this place that they came from?
And I wasn't sure if they're trying to allude that these invaders are coming from, like, a forgotten place. So I don't know if this is a metaphor for homelessness, because instead of finding a better solution on how to fix the problems here in America, people might tend to look away. They don't want to see that problem. They try to hide it or think it's, you know, kind of that bystander effect that, oh, someone else will take care of it. So I don't know if that was perhaps one of the potential metaphors.
Yeah, and another really weird thing with the movie is that where did these invaders get these abundant supply of these weird-shaped brass or gold scissors? It's like, whoever built this place also decided to just mass-produce a whole bunch of scissors. Like, why not steak knives or whatever the case may be? So
yeah,
so
definitely.
Some missed symbolism there for me as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, the scissors definitely have symbolism, but the understanding of what it's really doing or why it's really there, I think, is what was missed for you, it sounds like.
Yes. And, you know, symbolism aside, again, where did all these abundant scissors come from?
I've also seen, you know, looking up about the movie, some people suggest that perhaps instead the metaphor is more so about our own personal dark side. Because essentially, like we said, that the invaders look just like them. So almost like that doppelganger or maybe that evil twin mentality or something. And so if this is a metaphor for our dark side, that we try to keep that at bay. But sometimes we're letting it out too much or something. Or rather than finding a happy balance, which is an interesting thought. But again, we don't really know.
Exactly. I mean... nothing against Jordan Peele, but for me, this movie was too much heavy on the symbolism and not enough explanation.
But then how about this? If you didn't worry about trying to figure out the movie...
But this is me. You can't see that with me.
So you just need to figure it out. You can't just enjoy the quirkiness of it or the action of it without understanding the why.
Exactly.
Okay.
I mean, in movies, I believe you can have both. And here, you get too much of one and none of the other.
As we talked about before, Corey does like nice little bows wrapped up on the movie sometimes. He definitely likes to have kind of a good linear, perhaps, explanation of things.
I'm okay with certain things leaving up to interpretation, but this just takes it to a whole nother level.
But yeah, so definitely, as we mentioned, this movie leaves a lot unexplained and left for your interpretation. So I think
or your imagination.
So you can kind of take it whatever direction you want. In fact, we'd love to hear, you know, what you guys think. So whether it's kind of this, I think I might be the only one thinking about the homelessness, because I haven't seen a lot of people talk about that. But lots of people talking about your dark side. So maybe that's kind of the tipping point of ideas. But it's definitely very interesting. I'm curious. I want to know more about the before. Like, I love like another movie that talks about the before, like before the 1986 funhouse scene. I would like to see all that up to that point.
Which would be the whole explanation.
Yes, that would be cool.
So you would like to see that too.
I know, but I think that would be a cool movie. Just maybe it's just a nice explanation, as you mentioned, of what's happening in this film and why it's happening. But it was really cool. It was stunning. The music was eerie. We talked about it had that good balance of scare and humor put in together as well. The dad, he was hilarious, you know, trying to battle his own doppelganger. He definitely, I think, added the comic relief parts, I think, for the film, or some of the comic relief parts for the film. So, what's the verdict? Does it make the movie shelf or not?
I would be just fine the rest of my life not seeing this movie again.
I would say at the moment, no, it doesn't make the movie shelf for me. I'm glad that we checked it out.
Yeah.
And so thanks and kudos again to our listener request for that. I think as I catch additional viewings of the film, I might solidify some of my own interpretations of the film, and that might make a tipping point of how much I do like it or not like it. But for now, it doesn't quite make the movie shelf. I think it's intriguing. I think it offers a lot of food for thought. I think once we were done watching it, we ourselves were talking about it, like our own thoughts and feelings about it. And I definitely recommend it just so that you can see it and start brewing your own interpretations. But I can't wait to see what is next for Jordan Peele, because we really liked Get Out. Everything he does with Keegan-Michael Key is so fun. he's just a really, I adore Keanu, the movie, The Little Kitten. Such a fun movie.
You've seen that?
Yeah, I've seen that.
Wait, I haven't seen that.
Because you chose not to watch it with me.
When did you see it?
I saw it on TV. I recorded it a long time ago.
Huh.
So okay. Check out Keanu. It's really fun. I would like a calendar of Keanu, the kitten. Keanu Reeves is awesome too. But anyway, so I can't wait to see what's next for Jordan Peele. He's definitely really cool, really amazing. So I recommend you check it out. It doesn't make the movie shelf, but I do recommend it. Also, because we saw this, because we rented it, I've already alluded to this a little bit already. Once we finished the film, it rolled right into showing some of the clips from the crew and the actors about the making of the film and what they did on preparing and getting ready. And so I really recommend you rent the film or watch the
behind TV. The scenes.
Yeah, watch the behind the scenes, because I think it gives you a new perspective. For example, Jordan Peele is describing how he filmed the scene where you have the family opposite the home invaders and the way he did all of that.
Yeah, the way he filmed that was pretty unique.
Yeah. So definitely check it out. Watch those behind the scenes. I think that will give you greater appreciation for the film. It's done really well, even if it does leave a little too much for us on the unexplained
and
room for interpretation.
Now, I still consider myself a fan of Jordan Peele from Get Out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, just because of that movie, he will be a fan of mine forever. This is just one of his, what I would say, Charlemagne misses.
Okay, now, we're not doing our picks of the week. However, we decided to throw in just a handful of other themed movies that we'll just list out and you guys can check out. So we were kind of thinking of what other doppelganger-ish movies are there. Of course, probably top on Corey's list of all sorts of topics.
Is one of my favorite movies that I love to watch,
which I think we've probably talked all sorts about in this on this podcast already, is Dave. Then you have Big Business. This one's a twin mix-up type of movie. You have Moon with Sam Rockwell.
A whole bunch of Sam Rockwells over there.
Yeah. You have The Parent Trap, another twin movie. I definitely recommend the Hayley Mills Parent Trap. That's the one I hold. I mean, the Lindsay Lohan is cute and cute and everything. I really like the Hayley Mills one. You have The Man in the Iron Mask. Fantastic film.
Another movie that I absolutely love.
And then you have a movie I really like is Bowfinger.
Yep, you really like that one.
I really like Steve Martin, and Eddie Murphy was so fun in that. I also recommend Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, the Jerry Lewis film. All right, so let's jump to the next in our bundle,
okay.
Dark Phoenix.
Yes.
So this is the latest addition to the X-Men film franchise, and we saw this earlier in the summer. And just to give you a quick synopsis, this is Dark Phoenix continues the X-Men First Class storyline, following the path or the fate of Jean Grey. For most X-Men fans, we all know that Jean Grey becomes Dark Phoenix, making her basically the most powerful X-Men, because she can fly, she can read your mind, she can destroy you. I mean, she's just super powerful.
Supposedly the most powerful being on Earth.
For this one, they go on a mission to rescue some astronauts, and in the process of, they thought it was like solar flares, but it's not solar flares, it's some sort of entity.
Yeah.
She somehow absorbs the entity, and that's what turns her, I think, into the Dark Phoenix.
Yes.
And now back on Earth, they are now confronted with some shape-shifting aliens that are really trying to harness her power.
Or the entity that's inside of her.
Because this is all very new to Jean Grey, as she's trying to figure out these new abilities, these shape-shifting aliens, they start trying to manipulate her in an effort to have her use that source of energy for their benefit.
I thought they were trying to get her to give it up.
Well, I think at first they were trying to use her, and then she was trying to give it up.
Okay.
But anyway, ultimately, I think this movie serves as a swan song to this franchise of X-Men.
Swan song?
Yeah, so like to the end, because this is the Fox X-Men.
Yes.
And it's transitioning elsewhere.
So to my knowledge, yeah, the whole X-Men franchises now have been acquired by Disney.
Mm-hmm.
So anything in the future related to, I believe, any X-Men or even X-Men associated characters like Deadpool and so forth, mm-hmm. is now going to be piloted by the Disney Corporation instead of 20th Century Fox.
Yeah.
Which I am looking forward to, because I don't think Fox has done the greatest job of handling this genre. I think it started out okay, especially with the pre-First Class generation, I guess, of the X-Men movies, except for the standalone Wolverine movies, which I have not been too much of a fan of. And you know, there's a lot of confusion because there's the Days of Future Past, which incorporated both generations, I guess, mm-hmm. the older. And Jean Grey, she had already had the Dark Phoenix saga when she was older in her life. So now, she's now younger. She's having it now. So does she, like, have two Dark Phoenix experiences? You know, there's just, like, way too much confusion and bad writing. And for me personally, this movie was very forgettable.
Yeah.
Okay. It is not... It's probably like the X-Men movie is probably my least favorite of them all so far. So it's almost as like the bad Green Lantern disaster.
So as far as the X-Men First Class group, I actually do like the group. However, I felt by this movie, because this is the James McAvoy, you have Michael Fassbender, yeah. Jennifer Lawrence.
I consider this movie the X-Men version of Amazing Spider-Man. Because you have Andrew Garfield, who, in my opinion, actually portrayed a very good Peter Parker in Spider-Man. But unfortunately, he was just written in a couple of very bad Spider-Man movies. And here you have an awesome cast.
Mm-hmm.
Again, written in a very bad movie, unfortunately for them.
Yeah, so because the first class, the very first of the first class, I really liked, like the one with Kevin Bacon. I thought that was excellent. I really liked it. It just had a fun feel. It was just so fun. It was fun to see that relationship developing between Xavier and Magneto.
Yes.
But again, by this movie, though, it just kind of felt like I was actually surprised to see like Fassbender still in there. And even Jennifer Lawrence, I was like, oh, I didn't even think she was still in here. And I just kind of got that vibe even from some of the actors that like they're done. Like they're already out the door mentally, or at least just felt that way.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, they're not really wanting to be X-Men anymore. But they just had to make this last film. So that was just the vibe I got. And
hopefully there will be a really good reboot from the Disney being at the helm now.
Because, I mean, we are big X-Men fans.
Maybe even with a new cast. Who knows?
And Corey and I, our relationship, I think one of our first year movies of being together was the X-Men film way back. Was it just called X-Men?
It
was just called X-Men. And our daughter really likes X-Men. That's usually her favorite Marvel characters. So we definitely want the movies to be able to be strong and survive. So hopefully good things will come. It's just this particular film just kind of, it seemed like a checkbox. Like they just checked off that they made it, but it just didn't, it just felt lackluster and not quite there.
Which I would say when it comes to the other side of the Marvel genre helmed by Disney, they've had very few misses. I mean, when you consider the scope of the Marvel Cinematic Universe that they have created and made, I mean, very few bad movies
mm-hmm.
from that. So hopefully exciting times are still ahead.
Yeah. So I did think that the visual effects looked really great. Everything that they did looked really great. All of Magneto's craziness always is so fun to watch.
Oh, yes.
It was fun to see, you know, some of the original first class members coming back together. But again, it was just kind of like, oh, well, I just felt like no one wants to be at this party.
Yeah.
So it was just kind of blah for me, which is sad and disappointing because I think we were super excited for it. So I think it's pretty evident of our verdict, but I'll do it anyway. What's the verdict? Does this make the movie shelf or not?
Oh, it is not going to make the shelf. I mean, if I'm crashing for the day on the couch and I'm browsing through channels, if I see it on HBO or something, you know, honestly, I may or may not flip to it. I mean, Dark Phoenix, what else is there?
So, yeah, it does not make the movie shelf for me. I really like this group. Like we talked about, the actors, I thought that it was, they're really fun, but...
Good cast and terrible writing,
unfortunately. Their spark just kind of fizzled for this one for me, so it does not make the movie shelf. Because we like X-Men so much, I wanted to quiz you, Corey.
Uh-oh.
So we're going to test your X-Men movie knowledge.
Are we going to see if I either get to keep or have to give up my Marvel fan card?
I bet you'll keep it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you some subtle clues.
And for our listeners, I have no idea what questions are going to be coming at me here. This is totally...
Yeah. Almost like code name. I'm going to give you some subtle clues, and you tell me what movie I'm mentioning.
Okay.
Well, it's okay. I think you'll be fine. All right. Ancient Egypt.
Apocalypse?
Yeah.
Okay.
My other two clues to go with that would have been Four Horsemen and Psylocke. Maybe I'm not doing code name. What's the game show that I'm thinking of? Pyramid.
Yeah.
Is it Pyramid?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm being like Pyramid.
$10,000 Pyramid, whatever.
Yes, except that I get to say more than just one word. Okay. Nazi Death Camp.
First X-Men movie? Or X-Men? Just X-Men?
Helmet.
Okay. So the Tesla now in first class also. Okay.
McTaggart.
Yes. First class.
Yes, X-Men First Class.
Which I will say, I was really impressed how they reincorporated those scenes from the original movie.
Yeah, they did a really great job.
In that movie. Yes,
in fact, I think when we were watching it, we were trying to figure out, is this new or is this not new?
Yeah.
Statue of Liberty.
X-Men.
And then I was going to say Hot Dog Stand.
The first Stan Lee cameo. At the Hot Dog Stand.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not the first appearance of Stanley, because he's been in other movies, such as Mallrats and stuff.
But yeah.
As far as, in fact, this is even pre-MCU, because the first MCU movie was Iron Man. But yeah, one of the first Stanley cameos, if not the first.
Special Forces. Cancer.
Deadpool. X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Love Story.
Okay, going back to Deadpool. Well, the first two would have fit either one, because they both had Wade Wilson. They were both in the Special Forces group. So, until then, yes.
Because, as he likes to say, it's a love story. All right. White House. Pyro.
I am going to say, one moment, X-Men United.
And then Alkali Lake.
Yes.
Yeah, so X2, X-Men United. All right. See, so far you're doing great keeping your Marvel fan card. Dystopian future.
Days of Future Past.
Dementia.
Uh-huh. Keep going.
X-24.
Oh, okay. That is Logan.
Mm-hmm. Good job. Civil War.
Last Stand.
Logger.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Gambit.
Okay. Well, the only one that has Gambit was X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Yes. Okay. My final clue was Lost Memory.
Oh, yeah. Where he gets his amnesia.
Yes. Lucky.
Lucky?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
X-Force.
Well, the first movie appearance of the X-Force is Deadpool 2.
Mm-hmm. And then Family. Because it's a family story.
Yeah, it's a very messed up family story. Yeah. Yes.
Alcatraz Island.
Last Stand.
Mm-hmm. And then
going back on the Lucky, yes. The way they handled Domino was just really, really awesome in that movie.
And then my other two clues for Last Stand would have been Juggernaut and and Phoenix.
Well, Juggernaut would have also been Deadpool 2.
Yes.
But I'm going to rip you in half now.
But Phoenix was not in Deadpool 2. All right. POW Camp, Samurai.
Yeah, okay, so Wolverine 2, whatever, I'm not sure if there was a subtitle for that.
Actually, it's called The Wolverine.
Oh, just The Wolverine, okay.
And then my final clue for that would be Severed Claws.
Yeah.
And I think this is my last one.
Okay.
Sentinels.
Days of Future Past. Mm-hmm. The only movie that had them.
And then I was going to go with Nixon, White House Bunker, and Jean Grey is Alive.
Well, I say that that's the only movie that had the Sentinels there. I think there was another movie where they're in the X-Room training, and there mm-hmm. were some Sentinel appearances in there as well. But as far as the actual real-life appearances of them in the movie, yeah.
But good job, Corey. I get to keep your card.
All right. Yay!
So our final movie to talk about for this bundle is The Lion King. So we just got to see that this week. And this is the Jon Favreau digital remake of the 94. I keep on thinking it's 95, but 1994 animated Disney film of The Lion King.
He's trying to continue the success that he had with The Jungle Book, mm-hmm. live action movie.
And so, as I think you've joked before, it's kind of like the story of Hamlet, but for anyone who might not know the story of The Lion King, you have King Mufasa and his son, Simba.
Oh, who could not know the story of the Lion King? Come on.
And something happens where Mufasa is killed. Simba thinks it's his fault. His uncle, Scar, says, you know, run away. Never come back. Because Scar wants to be the king.
And then immediately tries to have him killed after telling him run away, which to me is like, what was the point of that?
So Simba runs away, kind of confronts some new friends of Timon and Pumbaa, which is a meerkat and a warthog.
Which is Lion King version of the two friends that Hamlet runs into, which is
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
Yep, there you go.
Which are, they're really fun people if you ever read the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are Dead play. But anyway. And then in the meantime, down at Pride Rock, things are not very prideful anymore. Scar's taken over. He's partnered with hyenas.
Decimating everything.
He's trying to get the queen to be his queen. And
same thing in Hamlet.
Yeah. Nala, which is Simba's buddy, they're now all grown up. She wants to help fix things, so she goes searching for help, is trying to get Simba to take his rightful spot. So anyway, so that's the premise. And
of both movies.
Yeah. So one thing we noticed, I mean, first off, the Jon Favreau remake is stunningly beautiful.
And I will say, I was really surprised how well they were able to recreate some of the scenes, because, you know, going to see the movie, I'm visioning some of the scenes from the original animated version. Mm-hmm. Like, man, some of these things can be like really difficult to portray in a more live action scenario.
Yeah, which is not live action. It's still digital.
Oh, well, yeah. And live scenery, I guess. But particularly the stampede scene, I'm like, oh my God, how are they going to pull that off? You mm-hmm. know, and he did it wonderfully.
Yeah. All the animals looked really great. Again, I think we felt very deceived sometimes thinking that this is live, but it's not live. I know that they did a lot of work on studying how how the animals behave and how their mouths would move so that they could kind of look like they're talking. Timon looked like an excellent meerkat. I loved every time he would pop up and be like in his little meerkat.
And one of my favorite characters, I love how Rafiki looks in this version mm-hmm. more than the original version, I think.
Yes. Most of the, like, all of the voices were great. I adored the fact that James Earl Jones was still Mufasa.
Yes.
I don't remember his name. I just always call him Benson. But whoever played the original Rafiki, I really liked him.
Yes.
So I did kind of miss his voice. But I know he had passed away a few years ago.
Yeah,
so he wouldn't even have been able. Same thing with the original Queen, which I get a kick out of the fact that they, James Earl Jones and her, which I can't think of her name, I want to say it's Madge, were the king and queen and coming to America, and they were the, you know, king and queen and Lion King.
Who did the voice for the newer
film? For the newer one, it was Alfred Woodard, which, I, you know, we love her. She's great. And
no, for the new Rafiki.
Oh, the new Rafiki.
Yes.
I don't think I caught that. To look him up.
Okay.
All the voices were great. Donald Glover played the adult Simba.
Yes.
Beyonce was the adult Nala. Most of the music was all the same as far as the Elton John music. I think there may have been a couple of, I don't know, there were a couple of new songs. I know I saw.
Oh, there was definitely a couple of new songs in this movie that was not in the original.
So
one totally new, one very expanded.
Yeah. So the comic of relief, of course, is Timon and Pumbaa. which is Seth Rogen and Billy Eichner. And they did an excellent job. They were pretty much just as fun as the original duo. But I did really like the fact that they had... There's a scene where they're being bait, in a sense, for the hyenas. I think it was that scene, right? And it was just super cute because they start doing Beauty and the Beast to our guest. And it was just... It was like, oh, this is not the same song, but it's great. I love it. Plot-wise, though, the movie mirrors the original Disney animated film. Back in the 90s.
They did it. So, you know, so in the downfall, they did absolutely nothing to kind of refresh the story.
There were some slight tweaks, of course, in some of the scenes, but yeah. I didn't really see differences in the plot development. That I recall, at least.
Not at all.
Yeah.
That I could tell.
So I did like the fact that when they do the Can You Feel the Love Tonight scene, the interaction between the lions, I liked. I felt that it felt a bit more realistic, rather than Nala giving him the come hither look. However, I really like I really like Donald Glover, great singer. Really like Beyonce, fabulous singer.
Yes.
I was not digging their meshing of Can You Feel the Love Tonight.
It's interesting is that right after the movie, you did mention that. Mm-hmm. And since you mentioned that, I've come across some commentary online of some other people saying that they did not feel the duet worked out that well.
Yeah. It didn't complement well. Like, it didn't fit. Like, yeah. It felt more like Nala or Beyonce kind of doing her own thing and Donald Glover doing his own thing, but not together. So I just didn't think they matched.
Now, interesting enough, in the original animated version, it took 8 voices to do Simba and Nala.
Yeah.
Okay, which in this movie, it only took 4.
Right,
Because in the original animated one, you had the speaking voices for Simba and Nala, young Simba and Nala. You had the singing voices for young Simba and Nala, so that's 4 right there. Mm-hmm. And then we get older, you got the speaking voices for older Simba and older Nala. And then you had 2 different singing voices for older Simba and older. So you got 8 voices doing 2 characters.
Right.
And so I can appreciate that they tried to keep it down to 4 this time. So
yeah, I think it was definitely wise and smart that they picked strong singers and the speaking is perfect and great.
And some of them, in the original role, I didn't think was necessary because, older Simba was played by Matthew Broderick in the original animated one. And he does sing. He does do Broadway. So why they thought it was necessary to get a different singing voice for the adult Simba, not sure, but they did. But oh, well.
But anyway, and that's such an iconic song. So when we finally got to that scene in the movie, it was just like, oh, this is not blending the way I want it to blend. Yeah. And it's not so much that I wanted it to be the same by any means. It just didn't blend right. I was like, I feel like I'm listening to 2 different people singing in 2 different rooms rather than singing together.
And maybe that's how they had to record it.
Yeah, I don't know.
We don't know. So
one other thing that I missed was the original hyena banter. I thought the hyenas were great. Like, the hyenas in the 90s version are kind of one of my other favorite aspects of the film.
Which you got Whoopi Goldberg doing one of them.
Yeah.
Why they couldn't get her to reprise her role as one of them again. Who knows? She's still around. Yeah, one of my favorite ones, Ed, which really didn't talk. He just had a really goofy face and kind of chuckled here and there.
So I felt like they were sassier in the 90s, and I wanted them to still be sassy, and I just felt like they weren't super sassy.
Yeah.
So they were more serious. Which, maybe that's what they were going for and which they would have achieved. I did miss the original banter. So, as you mentioned, visually beautiful. I mean, the digital work that they achieved with this is amazing.
Yes.
I know that even way back in the 90s version, the animators, they were studying the lions. I think they had like a lion in the studio. They wanted to
make everything. Cub. Yeah, they brought in these animals.
Yeah, they wanted things to be, as accurate as they could. In a animated film, but this one definitely takes it up a step. I think I mentioned to you after we saw the film that I was like, I kind of want this to be more National Geographic. Like, it's like, I know this is a kid's movie, but I kind of want it to be more gruesome.
Yeah.
Maybe that was a weird disconnect to me. I was like, well, wait a minute. If I was really watching lions fight, I'd see more claw action or something. Mm. I don't know. But it was really cool. And it was interesting to see the same scenes that we saw in the 90s. Now in what basically looks real, even though it's not real.
Yeah.
But what's the verdict, Corey? Does it make the movie shelf or not?
So I was really on the fence on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I know you like The Jungle Book, so I know you're a fan of these digital remakes.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I'm a fan of those, particularly that one. But on this one, I think I'm going to tilt it to no.
Okay.
As far as being on the shelf. Because I'll be honest, if I'm like, again, plopping on the couch at the end of the day, looking for something to watch, and I'm going to the HBO channels, let's say they had the original Lion King on at the same time as the newer one, I'm going to be on the fence on which one I'm going to turn to. You know?
Decisions of life here.
Because they both have an amazing storyline because the storyline is identical.
Uh-huh.
So it all comes down to what kind of look are you in the mood to see it in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, if I was to put this on the show, I'd be feeling like I have almost two copies of the same movie.
Yeah.
You know? So no need for that.
Yeah. So for me, I said no. And that's actually where I had my caveat note of that I wanted it to be more National Geographic. However, if, you know, I do recommend you go see it. It's a fun summer movie.
I mean, I love the original, and because it's the same movie, I love the remake.
The storyline is great. And especially if you're a family and you have kiddos, and especially if they haven't even seen the animated or the 90s version, yeah, definitely go check it out. It might be the one that is on your movie shelf then. It's just, I think, for me, I have so much of the 90s one in my head.
But for sure, hands down, one of these versions needs to be on everybody's movie shelf. I will say that. As far as which one, it's going to be up to a personal taste, really.
Yeah, so definitely personal preference. They're both excellent. I still think the 90s version definitely had a lot of groundbreaking to it. The music was awesome. I mean, it won Oscars for original song and the music score, I believe. So excellent, excellent films. The casting choices for this current adaptation are great. They really are. I think some, like we mentioned, some of the bantering from the original, at least with the hyenas, I don't think carried through.
Yeah.
But that's okay. I mean, again, it's your personal preference. So whatever you're leaning toward, go for it.
But it definitely has some surprises that you definitely did enjoy. That was not
your Yes, original, I am so. Ready for a Timon and Pumbaa, Seth Rogen and Billy Eichner movie, because they were awesome. I just had fun with them. And now, Corey, it is time for a side of bacon.
Ooh, going to our bacon now.
Kind of funny. We just talked about Pumbaa, and now we're going to bacon.
Yep.
So, from our...
Are you aching for some bacon? That was in the original. Sorry.
All right. So, for our last episode, we challenged the world to come up with Keanu Reeves to Chris Pratt. So, what is your connection, Corey?
Okay, so I'm going to start with Chris Pratt. I'm going to go to Lawrence Fishburne in the movie Passengers.
Mm-hmm. And it's so weird. I keep on forgetting about this movie sometimes. Or I keep on forgetting about other people being in the movie. I only...
Okay, there are so few actors. I mean, Jennifer Lawrence, and you got the mechanical...
Oh, Michael Sheen, I think?
Yeah, who is the bartender. And, you know, later on in the movie, Lawrence Fishburne gets woken up, and I believe he is the captain of the ship. And, you know, his role was a little bit short-lived as well, because, like, woke up, died helping to save the ship, and there he goes. And then the obvious connection from Lawrence Fishburne to Keanu Reeves would also be any of the Matrix movies.
Yes.
I'll pick the first one, which is my favorite one still.
Yes. Another groundbreaking film. I remember it being so cool to watch how they did the bullet camera.
Yeah.
And just to create that effect that now you see everywhere it seems.
Yeah, everybody's doing it now.
Even it was even in Shrek. All right. Well, that is a great connection, getting to use Matrix there. So for mine, I'm going with Keanu Reeves to Denzel Washington in a movie I've used before in a connection, Much Ado About Nothing, which is a great ensemble cast. I still need to show you the movie, Corey, so that you stop rolling your eyes. And then we have Denzel Washington to Chris Pratt in the Magnificent Seven remake.
Oh, gosh. That was so forgettable for me, sadly.
Yeah. I really like the original Magnificent Seven with Yul Brynner. But yeah, I think I had too high of expectations for the remake, unfortunately. All right, Corey, now do you have your bacon pick of the week?
Well, I know that this will break some of our fans' rules as far as picking actors in movies, because some people don't like it when we pick voice actors. But since this actor is just so prominent in both versions of The Lion King, I'm going to go with James Earl Jones.
Yeah, that just means you can't use The Lion King to make connections with him. All right, so my pick for this episode is Kiefer Sutherland. So, well, he wasn't in any of the movies we actually talked about.
Except we did talk about one, yes.
I referenced The Lost Boys when we talked about Us, because that's what they were theoretically filming when the family was visiting the boardwalk. So, and Kiefer Sutherland, of course, is in The Lost Boys as one of the vampires.
Yes.
So, we have James Earl Jones to Kiefer Sutherland.
That will be interesting.
Yeah, that should be fun. You just can't use The Lion King.
Okay. Or any movie that has just voice actors. Yeah. Supposedly.
Before we wrap up completely,
okay,
we wanted to give a shout out to the universe.
Oh, yes.
Because the universe answered.
Yes, it did. We put a call out and we did get an answer.
Yes. So if you remember from our last episode, which was the Toy Story episode, we were talking about some of our favorite animated shorts.
Yes, that are often shown right before the movie, the main movie.
Yes. And we could not think of Corey's favorite one, which we now know is called Inner Workings.
Yes.
Which was the animated short that was before the Moana film.
Yes. I really love that short because I can definitely empathize with that short. Because so many things I was like, oh, I don't want to do that. I can get killed doing that. You know?
You don't want to have a mundane routine. You know,
yeah.
That's right. All right. So we'll definitely make sure and include a link to that in our show notes.
Definitely.
So you can check it out.
And a special thanks to our listener that answered on that call.
Yes. All right, you guys. Thanks for listening to Movie Shelf.
And if you would, click that subscribe button to be sure to catch our future cast. And if you're listening on your Apple device, leave us a rating and a comment. Let us know what you think.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you. Also, be sure to check out our show notes page for links to some of the trailers of the movies we talked about, as well as our bacon notes. We'll catch you next time, you guys. Bye.
Bye-bye.